You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the New Churches Podcast. Dean Folks is going to be our guest today. He's been the lead pastor at LifePoint since its beginning in 2004. I've met him in the past. He's got a Master of Divinity from Mid-America Seminary in Memphis with a minor. You can always tell when someone writes their bio, because with a minor in Memphis barbecue. Dean is married to Angie. They have three kids, and they are, and I don't think we said they were in Columbus, but what community? I don't even remember. What community in Columbus?
Yeah, so we planted in Lewis Center up on the north side of town.
Yeah, yep, I remember. Originally. I texted a mutual friend of ours, Kevin Ezel, recently, and I really wanted to highlight, and you know, I have another podcast and some other stuff I do over at Outreach Magazine. I'm the editor-in-chief there, and I have the Stetzer Church Leaders podcast, which people can Google and find if they want. But we want to highlight some churches that have just been like tearing it up in church multiplication. I actually wrote, I think I said the phrase, kick butt sending church pastor. So I actually, to Kevin Ezel, I probably shouldn't say the words, kick butt sending church pastor. Yeah. But so he put you in that category. So that's pretty cool. So I want to talk a little bit about that, because LifePoint goes back 2004, so you are not a church plant. You can't claim the moniker this long. So you obviously stayed engaged and involved. So talk to us about what you're doing in church planting in and through LifePoint.
Yeah, I mean, we still call ourselves a church plant if we're trying to raise money. Yeah, like we still wrap ourselves around that if we're trying to
get that
raise funds. Yeah, so we were involved really as a supporting church for other church planters, church planting teams, up until about 2013, when we really decided that we wanted to up, you know, our game in terms of multiplication. We felt God's leadership and God's activity to do that, and really to send people. And so in 2013, we sent someone off of our team to a community that was about an hour away from us. And we only had a couple of families that were driving in, but we sent them as well. And that was really, you know, our first toe, you know, dip in the water in terms of sending multiplication. For us, I think that we realized early on that there's so many models out there, multi-site, multi-campus, multi-congregation. Like, we just had to figure out who we were. And it took us doing it to figure out who we were.
Fascinating. Okay. So engaged, involved in ongoing church planning, on an ongoing church planning basis. Love that. And so part of that is, because I remember back in the day, I planted this church in Erie, Pennsylvania, and then we planted two daughter churches. So I started a Bible study on, we'll call it a Bible study seeker group back then. We probably used the term on Tuesday night in one town outside of Erie, and on Thursday night in the other town outside of Erie. And we started building these new core groups. And I found out there's all kinds of ways to think about a core team for a new church plant. So I kind of started the groups. We had these core teams. Eventually we hired church planters to go take over those core teams and to plant churches. So how do you find, let's start with this. What essential characteristics do you look for when assembling a core team for a church plant?
Yeah. You know, for years you've said this, others have said this is not rocket science, but you know, the number one characteristic that's going to define the success or failure of a church plant is the spiritual and emotional health of the leaders, right? That pastor, his wife, their family, like that's going to be the number one driver. But we would say what we've learned here in Columbus, you know, if that's 1A, 1B is the size and development of that core team. And so I don't know that there's one place, we would say there's not one place that we have found leaders, but for our system and the way that we do multiplication, we really, you know, multiply from groups into groups, and those folks carry really they're the DNA carriers of the church anyway. So we develop core teams from people that already have our DNA because they've already been serving, and they are much more likely to go because it's us, right? Because they believe in, they've been here with us. They've been trained by us. They're for us. And so we found, and sending as many people as we can helps us. So if you have a great leader, he has a healthy marriage, certainly not, you know, not a perfect leader, not a perfect marriage, but you have a great leader, loves Jesus and has a good marriage, and you can send as many people as possible. That's been the most successful formula for us.
Yeah, no, totally. Makes sense. So, okay. So sending as many people as possible, because I remember when at Mill Creek, which is not too far from you. By the way, Columbus is such a great city, such a great city.
Yeah, it is.
I remember when I was doing something. I was there doing something and hung out with Eric from the Columbus Vineyard, and he could spend an hour and a half just telling you all the wonders of Columbus. Anyway, so we actually got up and we said, we were running probably 300 at the time we announced it, and then we grew to about 400 by the time we did it, and we sent out core teams. We actually sent out people, so probably 75 people to two different churches, because, you know, they started as core teams, they started coming to the mother church, and then we sent them out from that. And I think the one of the jarring things was, it was like we had people, like, we gave them there's insider language in church planning that Dean will know, but maybe some of you will know. We gave them a fishing license. So we started these small groups, these core groups, out these two locations outside of town. We then hired church planners, said, you have a fishing license to get anyone you want to leave our church to go to your church plant. And then I called all the tithers and said, don't talk to them.
Exactly.
And they did, man. They did. Like, we 75 probably people left. So we went, you know, one Sunday, boom, just felt that drop.
Right.
How do you navigate that with the mother church when people start leaving your church? You know, I mean, how many times can J.D. Greer say sending capacity, but at the same time, man, it still hurts.
Sure does. Yeah, and I wasn't ready for it. Our second multiplication in 2015, so we sent about 200 people at that time. And the way that, you know, we're structured for multiplication, when we send those folks, I mean, the folks who go are the folks you don't want to leave.
Right.
Like, they're the not, you know, you, there's maybe sometimes you'd like to invite up somebody to go or whatever, but I mean, the folks who go, they're not the one, they're the most missional, they're the most generous, they're serving, but they're the ones who want to reach people in their community. And so they're the most stoked about the mission and the vision. So I was not ready for the emotional toll standing up to teach that first Sunday. And there was this big hole where all of the, you know, we had 11 life groups at that time. We're meeting in a community called Delaware. So we invited all those life groups to, and they all took us up on it. but we had common vision. We had common language. We had so many. So they felt like, hey, this is us. So they're much more willing to go.
Right.
And so it took us 3 years to rebuild all of the positions and serving, the generosity. Right. It took us 3 years. And then we turned around and did it again.
Yeah.
And
you think you would have learned the lesson the first time?
What am I, a martyr?
Exactly. So give people an idea, though, like, of the numbers, because, and again, it's different in different places. People just need to be aware that, you know, planting a church in Georgia is different than planting a church in Ohio. But what size are you starting to multiply and send out core teams?
So in 2013, we were probably 11 or 1200. Then we probably grew to 1500-ish when we sent out 200 folks, and about the same again with 200 folks in 2018. Mm-hmm. Maybe we're a little larger at that time. So if that's helpful to give you our size culture.
Yeah, you're sending out large group. You're almost sending out congregations. You're hiving off, in a sense, congregations, which is
that's a
whole strategy that, you know, Leith Anderson back in the day started talking about this at Wooddale, and they started sending out, you know, they'd send out 600-700 people. And he would say, we were speaking at a conference once, and he would say, you know, I don't see why these people send out people to plant churches. They need to send out hundreds. And I was like, well, that's good, but that's not the only way. We want to set a, you know, we want to set a broad table to do that. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you kind of walk people through this. Now, talk to us a little bit about, how do you find, because you need people with some diverse backgrounds and skill sets in these core teams. How do you navigate that? How do you leverage that so that the plant goes well?
Yeah. So we have found they come from everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, one of our stories that we love to tell. So when we launched, you know, our first campus where we sent a significant number of people in 2015. There was a young man. He was a college student. He and his girlfriend at the time, they were living together, weren't yet married. They only came because their mom invited them to the Easter Sunday launch, right? And she promised them lunch. So they came, showed up that day. And that day, I believe he would say that that's the day they came to know Christ. Now, they were still had a lot to figure out. But eventually came, sat down with the brand new teaching pastor there. And, from there, it was a move. They moved out, moved their wedding up, started serving, led a life group, multiplied a life group. After multiplying a life group, eventually came on part-time staff, came on full-time staff. And then just 2 years ago, they launched our fifth multiplication. And it's just for us, it's been just a joy to watch them develop all the way along the but if you would have asked me, who's going to be your next, planting couple, there's no way I would have chosen. We didn't even know them. But 7 years to the day, 7 Easters to the day, they launched a brand new campus with 75 folks.
Okay. So when you're kind of in this process, one of the questions is who is qualified and who's not qualified? So, I've actually had part of our, and the language core team is kind of tricky. There's no biblical language of core team or launch team some people use. Mm-hmm. So we actually had on more than one occasion people who were not Christians who actually came along and could do certain, they could be part of the setup team. I wouldn't have lead worship or teaching Bible studies.
Yeah.
So where do you kind of have theological or those kinds of qualifications for people going out? You kind of surface that a little bit in this conversation, but what do you say? No, this is a go. This is a no-go. This is okay.
Yeah, I'm very similar to you. Like if they're public-facing teaching ministries, leadership ministries, obviously there's some natural starting points there. And I would say too that, you look at Paul's work in the book of Acts, look at the New Testament, and with a value that he placed on women as part of planting teams, planting groups. You look at just Lydia's example, right? Just one of that comes off the top of my head. And as women are core to the mission, so men and women leading, together on those teams, we place a high value on young people. So we have a lot of young people at our church who are leading worship on Sunday mornings, who are leading in kids ministries, so that when we're ready to multiply, they're ready to go. We've been blessed to watch, at one of our newest multiplications out in the community called Plain City, we didn't have anybody to lead worship, but we had built into a young man, and he's exceptional. He's exceptionally driven on time. All the things that you would love. But as a junior in high school, we said, hey man, we need you. You're coming off the bench and you're going to be the lead worshiper out there. And we thought if he can just get us through a year until he goes to college, him and a guitar, and he went out there, built a full band out of local people from that community as a high school junior, and just did an incredible, incredible job. So,
you're setting a pretty broad table, and that's what church plants tend to do, and that can draw people in who might not necessarily be involved otherwise. But also, too, then some conflicts can arise. How do you do conflict resolution within a core team to maintain a healthy working relationships there?
Yeah, I think the most important thing there is just relational equity.
Yeah.
For us, whenever we started, we kind of came in to our community with the Rick Warren more Saddleback model, right? Where we're going to go get a big crowd, go from crowd out of the crowd. You're going to develop the core.
Crowd to core, baby. Crowd to core. Right. Come on.
We quickly found that was not going to work.
Okay.
So we flipped that model on its head.
Yep.
And we decided we're going to go core to crowd.
Right.
And so because of that, the first people who actually engaged as members at our church, they were all at various points along the way. They were at our house for dinner. And so I think the key to handling relational conflict well is a depth of relational equity. Now, it about killed me, well, more so even my wife probably, having all those people over to our house. I grilled a lot of hamburgers in year one. But those moments around a kitchen table with people who are considering, do I want to be part of this? And by this, I don't just mean the church, but I mean Jesus. Do I belong? Can I fit? Those are the things that, and when it comes to conflict and relational equity, makes all the difference.
Yeah. Good. And I think that's key, walking some of those journeys. Okay. All kinds of unexpected twists and turns in church plants. How do you help people to be flexible, adaptable, adapt to these changing circumstances?
Yeah, I think that the things that we face today in just in terms of, however you want to refer to it, culture wars, whatever it is that you want to call it, it feels to me like things are changing at a more rapid pace. And you've actually done an incredible job of helping me and other church planters in our state navigate the realities of saying, hey, look, what's going on was going on in the 60s. Like our parents faced this, so this too shall pass. And it feels tenuous as well for a new church planter today. So we try and ask our guys to stay relationally connected to us and allow us to be the bad guy when there needs to be a bad guy. Like, we'll help you.
As the mother church, sponsor church, sending church, correct, you'll be the bad guy if you need to, rather than the church, yep, planter or those leaders having to be the bad guy.
Right. So we can say, hey, this is not us. Because, when somebody shows up day one and says, hey, we want to have a clown ministry, right? And we can be the ones that say, hey, that's just, we're not saying all clown ministry is wrong. We're just saying that's not us.
Yeah. So that's key. So, okay. So last kind of words with this, just what, I've asked a lot of questions about core development, launch team, things of that sort. Mm-hmm. What would you want church planters to know as they're working on this? Particularly, your situation is unique because you're sending out many of these things, but talk to us about what it looks like, just advice you would give to church planters working on teams or churches sending out teams.
Yeah, I think I did not place a high enough value when I was trying to put together core teams, core team leaders, even from our local field. I valued giftedness too much and resilience not enough. And there are so many people, the message that we got from so many church planting thought leaders was, hey, the people who start with you won't be with you in 2 years, 3 years. And I understand, that can be common, but that was not our reality. That was not true for us. Like, people hung in there and stuck with us. But I believe part of that was because God just blessed us with some resilient, not the most gifted, shiny penny kind of, they're not cutting record deals and all those kind of, but just resilient people who've done a number of things, a number of different jobs, but just because they got some grit.
Fascinating. Good, helpful, mm-hmm, conversation today. Helpful. Appreciate you. Like I said, we've got friends who are big admirers, and I've been an admirer from afar as well. So, Dean, thanks for taking the time with us in the New Churches podcast. If you found this helpful, leave your review wherever you download your podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Ed Stetzer, the Dean at the Talbot School of Theology. We'll hear you next time at the New Churches podcast.
You've been listening to the New Churches podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.